It's the last time we shut down because it will be the end for our business. I cried every day when I was out of work because I have a family to feed. We are worried. We can't fail this time.
Under the new guidelines, food service businesses are able to operate indoors at 30% occupancy, while they can serve at full capacity on terraces, provided they keep a 2-meter distance between tables. The 4-phase reopening is expected to last 2 months, with a gradual lifting of restrictions on movement inside of the Spanish northeastern region. A 10 p.m. curfew will stay in place for several weeks as the situation in hospitals and intensive care units remains critical. Meanwhile, authorities have launched massive antigen testing campaigns across the region in a bid to control the spread of the virus.
The antigen rapid test detects the COVID-19 virus using a nasal swab. It offers a highly reliable result within 15 minutes, and it is one of the most cost-effective tests on the market right now.
Although test sensitivity for rapid antigen testing is generally lower than for the standard PCR, authorities are pushing for their deployment, arguing they could be useful in detecting highly infectious people. With a population of 7.5 million, Catalonia has registered over 300,000 cases of COVID-19 and over 15,000 deaths since the start of the pandemic.
The reopening of the economy in Catalonia is fraught with its fair share of risk and reward for everyone involved. It will take at least 2 weeks to find out if the second shot at the virus was successful. The stakes for the food service, hospitality, entertainment and sports industries have never been higher. Kusai Kadri, Barcelona.
The coronavirus crisis has highlighted just how vulnerable the EU is when it comes to even the most basic healthcare requirements, such as having enough face masks. The bloc has also had to import ventilators and medication, mostly from China. The European Commission has just unveiled a pharmaceutical strategy aimed at making the EU less dependent.
We do not want to see, never again, the problems that we faced during the first weeks of the pandemic. Never again.
The plan is to ensure essential items are manufactured within the EU. The European Commission is also concerned that EU nations will not be ready to distribute vaccines when they become available in the coming weeks. Just half of the bloc's 27 nations have published plans. Countries are being told to redouble their efforts.
This means that member states need to have the necessary infrastructure and the logistics, so when there is a safe and effective vaccine, they can roll it out and deploy it as quickly as possible.
Businesses are buckling under the pressure of lockdowns in many EU countries. The run-up to the December and January holiday period is normally their most profitable time. EU leaders continue to squabble over much-needed financial support packages for employers.
We've seen a major shock to the whole of the euro area, major trouble in Spain, in Italy, in other countries. I think the response was too weak.
Officials warn that if COVID-19 restrictions are relaxed too soon, hospitals will be overwhelmed during early 2021. It appears to be an impossible health-economy balancing act for governments. There is concern we are becoming complacent because we know vaccines are coming. Equally, authorities are worried too few of us will take advantage of the scientific breakthrough.
The European Centre for Disease Control says each year hundreds of thousands of healthcare workers in the EU refuse to take the seasonal flu vaccine. It begs the question how many of them, and how many people in general, will agree to be injected with a COVID-19 vaccine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Arrivals on the Canary Islands have surged. Almost 17,000 people have reached their shores so far this year, more than 10 times last year's total, and hundreds have died trying. The Spanish government has promised to set up camps and shelters for more than 7,000 people, but overwhelmed local authorities and activists say the migrants are being treated with contempt.
The majority of migrants who are arriving are returnable, or expellable, if we may say. They are not candidates that apply to our reception system. Our reception system is tailored for vulnerable people and people who have asked for international asylum.
Over in France, images of homeless migrants camped out on a Paris square being evacuated by police have caused outcry, forcing lawmakers to comment on the situation that seems far from under control.
Cette manifestation était-elle autorisée?
Was this event authorized? Was it legal? The answer is no. Should we have left on the Place de la République hundreds of tents, hundreds of people without evacuating them? The answer is no. Was I, like you or others, shocked to see some images on social media of evacuation, proof that this is a free country? Of course.
Ceux qui n'ont rien, pas même à toi.
Those who have nothing, not even a roof over their heads, sheltered themselves symbolically under the statue symbolizing the Republic to call for fundamental rights. They were peaceful. The order was given for them to be evacuated at any cost, although they did not represent any threat at all.
Immigration to Europe is fueled by wars and economic instability in which Europe is complicit. The bloc's exploitation of resources and interventionism goes on around the globe, and countries like Britain sell arms to almost all regimes deemed violators of human rights. To stop migrants setting out in the first place, millions of euros are also pumped into countries like Libya, a conduit for African migrants, and end up in the hands of militiamen, traffickers and Coast Guard members who imprison and torture thousands of migrants. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The latest challenges in the Muslim world. This is the main theme of the gathering, attended by political activists. On top of the conference's agenda was the French government's recent blasphemy to Prophet Muhammad, which triggered worldwide condemnation from Muslims and religious leaders.
Insulting the Prophet of Islam is tantamount to blasphemy against all other religions. The divine books of Christianity and Judaism both speak highly of the last prophet named Muhammad. Religions don't have any issues with each other. As a Jewish scholar, I believe what the French president said against Islam is unacceptable. He has ignored the sentiments of around 2 billion people.
Delegates also condemned Sudan, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates for their normalization of ties with Israel. Last month, Sudan became the fifth Muslim country after Bahrain, the UAE, Egypt, and Jordan to establish diplomatic ties with Israel. Delegates at the conference called it a strategic folly and a backstabbing of Palestinians, who have been suffering under more than 7 decades of Israel's occupation.
Those treacherous regimes have never cared about the interests of Muslims. They only seek to consolidate their foothold as rulers. I'm sure that the people of Bahrain, the UAE, and Sudan do not share the stance of their regimes toward Israel. Muslims will never recognize Israel and its occupation of Palestine.
Although the Arab-Israeli détente infuriated the Muslim world, activists say it should not come as a surprise, and it's only a revelation of their long-standing covert ties. This is why they believe the move will not lead to a seismic shift in regional power balance.
Experts here find the root cause of regional crises and lack of coordination and a growing chasm between regional states. They say external players such as the U.S. never want this gap to be bridged, since such a division has long been a chance for them to serve their interests in the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In an official visit to Afghanistan, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh is seeking to boost ties between Kabul and Tehran via expanding mutual cooperation, mainly in terms of peace and security.
Security of Afghanistan is our high priority. We think that the security of two nations, Iran and Afghanistan, are very much connected to each other. So we think that through collaboration, through cooperation, we have to be able to secure a stable situation in Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman comes as many here believe Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and that is why players like Iran are struggling to keep their role in the country's peace and security.
Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and all regional players have developed new plans in line with their own interests. For instance, Daesh is replacing the Taliban in Afghanistan. The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman to Kabul proves Iran's effort to expand its role in Afghanistan's security.
The visit of Iran's delegation comes as Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan visited Kabul last week.
The recent political trips of Afghanistan's eastern and western neighbors to Kabul are a proof of importance of the country to them. That is especially at a time when insecurity is on the rise and negotiations are underway between the Afghan government and the Taliban to bring a lasting peace to the war-torn nation. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a speech delivered on September 21st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with participants in ceremonies throughout the country to honor the veterans of the Sacred Defense Era. The meeting was held on the occasion of 40th anniversary of the Sacred Defense. A new model for the presence of the people in the arena of Sacred Defense and the cultivation of talents.
We could cite a youth who worked as a journalist in a certain newspaper and who later on would join the front lines, turning into a personality like Shahid Hassan Bakhri. The same is true of Shahid Babai and others. This innovative model of popular presence could always be employed. Today, too, we can benefit from this model. If we show determination and look at the people and at our affairs with the right outlook, we could benefit from this paradigm. Of course, war conditions and the economy are different from each other. Thinkers and intellectuals can consider and pursue this model as a means of national power. Should they do so, then the role of the back of forces will become as significant as the front lines in this model. This is because not everyone can hold a gun. Interests, dispositions, and capabilities are different. Some people can play as they did play their part behind the front lines. Firstly, we should mention that financial assistance and transfer of food was very important and influential.
Your light and love, all I see, your thing nor I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
The same is true of attending to the wounded and the glorious act of seeing off funeral the martyrs. I have said many times that if martyrs had not received such honor and respect, the thrill of martyrdom would not have blazed the way it did. Whenever the bodies of martyrs, one or more, entered a city, the people's presence and warm reception and their act of seeing them off to their resting place was a very important and influential event. Presenting cultural and promotional activities, composing poetry and slogans, nullifying the enemy's psychological warfare, as the enemy was constantly engaged in psychological warfare, and some people in the cities and villages of the country were constantly nullifying them, hosting and accommodating war-stricken people and the people's decision to stay in their cities. For example, cities like this Fool, while their cities were under heavy bombardment, was really astonishing.
Alhamdulillah.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, kiddie. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran has condemned the terrorist attack against its top nuclear scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, and says his killing will not go unanswered. This week, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had flown to Saudi Arabia to see strongman Mohammed bin Salman, and during the previous week had visited Israel. Tehran says Tel Aviv is behind the assassination. Stay with us as we look at the possible players in this terrorist attack.
The assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh has caused outrage in the country, with officials blaming Israel for the terrorist attacks and pledging retaliation. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called Fakhrizadeh's assassination a proof of enemies' desperation.
This terrorist act indicates the enemy's failures in political fronts in the region as well as across the world. The assassination of the scientist suggests the extent of enemy's malice and garage toward Iran's scientific capabilities and achievements. The killing of figures like Fakhrizadeh will not weaken Iran's will to move toward scientific development and progress. Rather, it makes Iranians more resolute in their path.
Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, said harsh revenge awaits the terrorist elements and all those behind the assassination. chief of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, said retaliation and harsh punishment for the perpetrators are already on the agenda. Salami said the terrorist act was plotted and directed by the Israeli regime. In a tweet, Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said there were serious indications of an Israeli role in the assassination. Fakhrizadeh's name was mentioned multiple times in a 2018 presentation by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where he repeated Tel Aviv's baseless allegations against Tehran's nuclear program.
A key part of the plan was to form new organizations to continue the work. This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
The New York Times also quoted three intelligence officials as saying that Israel was behind the terrorist attack. Hossein Dehghan, a military advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, said Israel is seeking to intensify pressure on Iran with the aim of provoking a full-fledged war. The former defense minister said Iran will descend like lightning on the killers of the country's scientists and will make them regret their actions. The head of the Iranian Judiciary's High Council for Human Rights said Fakhrizadeh's assassination was aimed at hindering the country's scientific progress.
What is noteworthy from my point of view about the assassination attempt made today in Tehran was that there is a serious will by the Iranians' enemy to prevent the improvement and advancement of the Iranian people. They are going to put hurdles on our way.
Fakhrizadeh was also leading a team tasked with developing one of Iran's first kits for coronavirus diagnosis. The plot to assassinate him was not the first, as he had survived several such attempts in the past years. Four other Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated between 2010 and 2012, with Tehran and Western intelligence agencies blaming Israel for those killings. The Israeli terror campaign has been widely seen as a project to stymie Iran's peaceful nuclear activities, which have been under the intense scrutiny of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, journalist and commentator Leif Maruf, out of Beirut, and peace and justice activist and analyst Sarbaz Ruhola Rezvi, out of Qom. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in Beirut. Leif, who do you think is actually responsible for this terrorist attack?
Well, we don't have definite proof, but we have fingerprints of those who did it, and we know that the apartheid Israel has been targeting the nuclear program of Iran for more than a decade now. We have heard the comments of the Prime Minister of Apartheid Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, a couple of years ago, specifically naming Professor Fakhrizadeh as one of the targets that they are going after. And we have seen that the collaboration between Apartheid Israel and Mujahideen Khalq that are stationed in France and Albania and have been receiving huge amounts of support by the United States and European powers, along with apartheid Israel. So all of these are the main culprits that are suspects for this dreadful assassination. And we can add on top of them Saudi-occupied Arabia and the meeting that happened between MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, and Netanyahu and Pompeo just days before this assassination.
Sarbaz Ruhola, during the almost 42 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, we've seen many actions against the country. Terrorist attacks against nuclear scientists are just one of those actions. Why do you think that this is the case? What's the bottom line? What are Iran's enemies after by doing these type of acts?
Going back to your first question, I think analytically it's very clear that who is behind all these acts of terrorism in Iran. Looking again back to the series of terror attacks between 2010 and 2012, in which four prominent Iranian scientists were assassinated. This, after of course a gap of 8 years, is another act of terror, analytically proven, done by the Zionists, not based on the data, but based on the analysis. It's quite clear, and all the analysts across the globe will confess that the only regime that can benefit from these sorts of acts against Iranian scientists is the Zionist regime. So it's very clear. But there is one important point, that because someone said, okay, there's something between Iran and Israel, and that's why Israel is making targeting Iranian scientists. But let's go to the roots of the problem between Iran and Israel. Iran, initially speaking, if you look at it from the perspective of a country, if you look at it from the perspective of a nation state, it has nothing to do with Israel. No borders there, nothing is related to Iran and Israel. But there's just only one point, which is from the perspective of Iranian revolution. That is the issue of occupied Palestine and Jerusalem and the refugees in the case of Palestine. So going to the core of this company between Iran and Israel is something related to the issue of Palestine. Because I see so many commentators, so many observers are ignoring this part of the story. This is all because of Palestine. What Iran is paying now, the price that Iran is paying now, exactly the time that the Arab regimes are looking after normalization of their ties and making benefit of their connection with the Zionists as well as the Americans, based on the connection, based on the normalization of ties with Zionists. They are looking after their profits and benefits, but at the same time, Iran is paying the price of defending the issue of Palestine. Unless, if you look at it, as I mentioned at the very beginning, from the perspective of a nation state as Iran, and if you forget about the Iranian revolution, there's nothing between Iran and Israel. There were relations between Iran and Israel before that. Look at the 70s, look at the 60s. Iran was on the side of the Israelis during the Arab-Israeli war, during the Shah time. But it was the revolution, 1979 revolution, that started a new trend between Iran and Israel, and Iran decided against it.
All right. Iran has experienced 40 years of sanctions, the luring of its academics to the U.S. and other Western countries, and even its scientists imprisoned in the U.S. after they insisted that their research be recorded as being done by an Iranian science instead of as an American. Why is there such sensitivity by some Western and regional entities about Iran's academic achievements?
Well, because Iran and the rest of the world are supposed to be just servants for Western imperialism. Any state that attempts to be independent, sovereign in its academic, in its technological, in its military abilities, it is a target for the West. And this is what has been the most important achievement of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. That it was able to turn Iran, under all these extreme pressures of wars, of sanctions, and blockades of the country, to turn it into a powerhouse of education, of technology, of science, and to be sovereign in those choices and be able to achieve and deliver on its basic needs. Technology, of electricity, of energy, of defense. We have to keep in mind here today, this assassination of this great scientist, it does not come out of the blue. It, as mentioned before, there was assassinations in 2010 and 2012 of Iranian nuclear scientists, and those assassinations happened under the regime of Obama. So right now we have a change happening in the United States. Some people are wishing or wishful thinking that Biden is going to change anything. But remember, it was Obama who started this practice of assassinating scientists in Iran. Trump is just continuing it, and definitely Biden will also consider.
Well, Laith, you brought up an interesting a topic that I want to get into a little bit later, but now that you've brought it up, you've talked about that basically it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. Their policy in dealing with Iran, one, and dealing with Israel is basically the same. I want to look at that side of things. And Sarwar Ruhollah, you alluded a little bit earlier that the bottom line of all of this is Iran's stance in dealing with Palestine. Put all of this together, and how do you see this overall sensitivity that Washington has for Tel Aviv and what seems to be this disdain for the Islamic Republic of Iran?
You know the problem. You know there are different issues, different cases between Iran and the United States of America from the very beginning of the Iranian Revolution. But there is one very crystal clear issue between Iran and America. That is Palestine. Iran is definite in supporting, in standing with the Palestinians and to liberate the Palestinian occupied lands. And the United States of America also, be them Democrats or Republicans, no difference, are very clear to be in support of the Zionist regime. This is the red line for both. I mean, the red line for Iran is Palestine, and the red line for the American regime and the United States of America, whoever is going to rule the country, it doesn't make any difference, is to support the security of, as they say, the so-called security of the Zionist regime. So that is the clash point, actually, between Iran and the United States of America. And as it was mentioned, Joe Biden also very clear in defending the so-called security of Israel and having no tolerance against so-called resistant, what they call it, terrorist groups, and also from our perspective, the resistant groups. So this is that bottom line. And don't forget, there is a theory of trap. Regarding this assassination taking place, some believe that it is a trap because Biden is coming, most possibly, and if Iran is going to react, the consequences could be very, very bad for Iran. That's why it is a trap for Iran and to trigger Iran, to stimulate Iran, that Iran will come and react. But I believe that this analysis, this theory of trap analysis for what took place in the assassination is totally wasted. I don't believe in that. Because the first issue is that the one who is behind the assassinations is the Zionist regime itself. It's not a matter of the assassination, it's not a matter of the martyrdom of the General Soleimani, which was done directly by the Americans. This act of terror was done, we believe, analytically, was done directly by the operation of Mossad, as it was done before. So this is the first point. So if Iran is going to react, the target of Iran possibly is Israel.
Well, let me just jump in here. Sarbaz Ruhollah, you said it was Mossad. But do you think that the United States was also involved, or do you think that they had previous information about this attack?
I have no comment on that. But the point is that the Zionist regime has always mentioned that they are looking after their targets inside Iran. And if they find any opportunity, I don't believe that they are going to postpone their evil act of terror inside Iran. So the recent case, they have been looking at, as was mentioned by Netanyahu 2 years ago in 2018, that Fakhrizadeh, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, was their target from years before. And he was assassinated. There were different attempts of assassinations as well. I believe that Zionists, if they find their targets, if they find any possibility of targeting any scientist, anyone who is a prominent person in the progress, in the scientific progress of Iran, they will not lose their opportunity and
okay.
they will do so. I have no on the information, the possible information of the American side or not, but I'm sure that whenever they find the opportunity, they will do their evil job.
All right. Well, Laith, what about that? Do you think that the terrorist attacks, like the one yesterday, is actually a sign of weakness of a regime initiating the attack, and that it's a desperate attempt to try to create chaos and disruption in Iran's progress?
Definitely. You could see in the last few years how the apartheid Israel and the United States itself have realized that their power is waning. and they are not able to achieve much with all the tools that they have used before. They are also not able to go into a direct war with even somebody as small as Hezbollah in Lebanon, with just around 30, 40,000 fighters. So what has happened in the last year with the assassination of Martyr General Soleimani and al-Muhandis, and now the assassination of Fakhri Zaideh, is them trying to show that they have an ability somehow to harm the progress of Iran and the resistance axis in general. One thing that we have to point out here is that, whether Biden comes into power in January or not, there will be no change in the process of how the United States views Iran. My colleague spoke about the red line of apartheid Israel. It is because apartheid Israel is the only thing that guarantees the supremacy of the United States in the Western Asia and North Africa region. Without that existing, it naturally all the Arab people will unify no matter what stands in their way other than apartheid Israel. So what we have here is an existential issue. Palestine and the liberation of Palestine are existential for us as Arabs, as Muslims in the region, and it's also an existential issue for white supremacy and imperialism in a global scale, not only in control of our region. And things are coming into a head there. And we know that even those who give up on Palestine or give up their weapons, let's say like Gaddafi and the regimes in Egypt and others, they don't get anything in return. In fact, they get killed as Gaddafi got killed. So Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, Yemen, they have learned the lesson that you have to stand on your principles and you have to fight back, because even if you give in to the empire doesn't want you to be an equal.
Okay, well, Sarbaz Ruhollah, now some Western countries are calling for restraint. What does that exactly mean when they're asking Tehran to restrain itself after such a terrorist attack, and when at the same time Tehran can definitely expect nothing from the so-called international community as far as actually doing something against the perpetrators?
Yes, as I mentioned, it's based on an illusion that they think that if Iran is not going to react on what place, and there are opportunities for JCPOA being once again on the track after the new government in the United States of America. But as it was mentioned, there is no any fundamental and substantial difference between what's going on in between Iran and the United States of America by the changes of the governments inside the United States of America. But I believe there is one important point that should be followed. Sorry to shift a little bit, because I want to mention this important point. I believe that there should be a legal reaction on behalf of the Iranian side, because let's not forget that Shahid Fakhrizadeh, Dr. Fakhrizadeh, was the deputy of the Iranian defense minister. He was a high-level Iranian authority in the Iranian government. He was the deputy of the Iranian defense minister, assassinated by Zionist regime behind him. So there should be a legal process to raise this case in the legal, platforms of vote, because this has been repeated once again and again.
A legal process, where exactly are you talking about?
It should be followed on behalf of the Iranian side. Any possible international code, international platform where this case of terror should, because this is against all the charters and the basis of the United Nations and all the international law. All these laws have been, violated by the Zionist
regime. Okay, stay with me. I'm almost out of time. I want to get Leith back in on this. Leith, your take on that. Do you think that this can be followed up by the international community or in a legal setting, that Iran actually would be able to proceed and actually get the verdict that they deserve? Or is it something that Iran really has to pursue in a different way to get that revenge or justice, if you want to say?
Well, there, you know, have to remember that the International Court of Justice and other international courts, both apartheid Israel and the United States, are not part of those jurisdictions, and they have refused to be part of that. So what does this mean? That means that Iran really cannot pursue that war. And we have to remember also that these international courts are marred with racism and colonialism and have always only targeted countries in Africa and Asia and never have pursued the war criminals of the United States and others. And we know how the judges in the International Court of Justice are now under sanctions by the United States.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut both of you off. Sorry, Basru Hala. I know you want to get in on this, but we're out of time. And thank you both, journalist and commentator Laith Marufat of Beirut and peace and justice activist and analyst Basru Hala Rezvi out of Qom. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks so much for being with us.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Climate heating gases have reached record levels in the atmosphere despite the global lockdowns caused by the coronavirus pandemic, the UN's World Meteorological Organization has said. There is estimated to have been a cut in emissions of between 4.2% and 7.5% in 2020 due to the shutdown of travel and other activities. But the WMO said this was a tiny blip in the continuous buildup of greenhouse gases in the air caused by human activities and less than the natural variation seen year to year. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Kenny Stencil Ryder. This article is published under the heading No Time to Lose for Climate Action. Atmospheric CO2 continued to rise in 2020 despite COVID-19 lockdowns. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The COVID-19 pandemic provoked a global economic slowdown that led to a slight reduction in carbon dioxide emissions in 2020. But this year's drop has had no measurable impact on the ongoing buildup of heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere. That's according to a new report published on Monday, November 15th, by the United Nations World Meteorological Organization, WMO, which advocated for responding to the climate emergency with bold action that includes a thorough reconfiguration of economic, energy, and transportation systems. While the coronavirus-driven restrictions on commerce have been a life-saving public health intervention, the lockdown-related fall in emissions is just a tiny blip on the long-term graph, said WMO Secretary General Petteri Tallas. The report estimated that as a result of the temporary shutdown of air travel and other activities, the total reduction of annual global greenhouse gas, that is GHG emissions, in 2020 will be between 4.2% and 7.5%. But that has had a negligible impact on GHG concentrations, the result of cumulative past and current emissions. CO2 remains in the atmosphere for centuries, Tallas pointed out, meaning that actions taken this year to curb the spread of a deadly infectious disease are not a solution for climate change. As Greece reported in April, the world is still on track to release 95% of the carbon dioxide emitted in a typical year, even as we're stuck at home. One reason why is that, as Matt Huber explained on the Unequal Carbon Footprints website, the bulk of emissions are generated by the industrial sector operated by very large and profitable corporations. If we are going to solve climate change, Huber added, we should start by thinking about how to reform the behaviors of these actors first. Although the global response to the pandemic is not an adequate way to approach the climate emergency, it does provide us with a platform for more sustained and ambitious climate action to reduce emissions to net zero through a complete transformation of our industrial, energy, and transport systems, Tallas said. As The Guardian reported recently, scientists calculate that emissions must fall by half by 2030 to give a good chance of limiting global heating to 1.5 centigrade, beyond which hundreds of millions of people will face more heat waves, droughts, floods, and poverty. Tallas stressed that achieving carbon neutrality is economically affordable and technically possible and would affect our everyday life only marginally. There is no time to lose, he added. In a video based on the findings of the report also released recently, the WMO repeated its no time to lose for climate action message as it called for strong efforts worldwide to address the emission crisis. We need to stop the emissions and keep the fossil fuels in the ground, tweeted a scholar activist David Fopp. CO2 concentrations are going up and will continue to increase, he noted. Unless we stop the fossil fuel society and replace it with a just and humane global democracy. Methane, which is produced by cattle, rice paddies, and fossil fuel exploitation, is responsible for 17% of the heating effect. Its concentration is now 2.5 times pre-industrial levels. Another important greenhouse gas is nitrous oxide, which comes from overuse of farm fertilizer and forest burning. It is now 23% higher than in 1750. The greenhouse gas data is collected by the Global Atmosphere Watch Network, which includes stations in the Arctic, high mountains, and tropical islands. they have continued to operate despite COVID-19 restrictions hampering resupplies and rotation of staff in often harsh and isolated locations.
Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.